Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to Speed City with John Massengill, Bob Barsha, and Jonathan Green. It's the fastest hour on the radio, Speed City.
All right, gearheads, welcome to the show. We just watched the 2023 Formula One Hungarian Grand Prix at the Hungaroring in Budapest. This is John Massengill in the studio in Austin, Texas, joined by my friend Jonathan Green in the studio and Mr. Bob Barsha from the Bob Barsha headquarters studio in Atlanta.
Varshland.
Varshaland.
World headquarters.
The world headquarters, yes.
Well, boys, not the most exciting Formula One race.
Really?
No.
But it was a race.
It was a race.
I thought it was pretty cool. And my wife sitting next to me on the couch watching it at one point said, "This is really interesting."
Oh, good. All right. There is not.
I've only been doing it since 1987.
Well, she tells you
how much she watches.
There's hope for your marriage then, because things are really, she's really taking an interest in what you're doing. This is good.
Yeah, I suppose so. It has to be something, doesn't it?
Yeah. I love that expression on Mr. Varsha's face. That was great. That was classic.
No, it wasn't a classic. But I mean, obviously it was very intriguing, as you say. There was a lot of strategy at play. Some of which we didn't kind of expect.
Yeah. And you know, we have to pause. We talk about the dominance of Red Bull, right, and all of that, but we still think that this is history, that we're watching history.
There's no question. There's no question at all when you really look at the numbers and the figures.
Yeah, you're watching.
12 wins in a row, and Bob, you can remember when McLaren did that 88 thing, and,
sure.
You know, I remember thinking at the time, wow, are these guys so much better? And, you know, Ron Dennis was at the height of his powers, and, you know, it just was. The red and white was the only thing going. And,
yeah.
You know, now Red Bull are in that ascendancy. And we forget,
right.
You know, Mercedes were doing this. I think the difference with Mercedes, and it might come to be if Perez keeps his foot in, but the difference with Mercedes is that Rosberg, each and every weekend, always had a chance of beating Hamilton, you thought.
Right.
And, of course, finally did it when they swapped engineers and all the rest of it. But the point was, he kept us alive, whereas at the moment, Verstappen's on his own. Perez, you know, does a good job of cleaning up his mess, to be fair, each and every weekend, because, again, he's on the podium after what was, you know, look at that first lap on Friday. Terrible.
Yeah, I mean, Perez, he needed this weekend badly.
Big time.
He did, and he got it. You know, this is, and you know, I go yakking on about it all the time. This is the essence of Formula One.
Mm.
You build your race car. Nobody else does that. NASCAR, IndyCar, you name it. They buy a chassis made by a constructor, even in the World Endurance Championship. Toyota's chassis are made by Orica. You know,
yeah.
And, you know, you make it as quick as you possibly can, and sometimes you get it wrong, and sometimes you have a world-beating generational talent behind the wheel, and those are very hard to find, which explains why we often see reasonable gaps. You mentioned McLaren back in 1988 when they won 15 of 16 races.
Yep.
You had arguably the two best drivers in the series,
yes,
in Alain Prost and Ayrton Senna.
Mm-hmm.
And both will go down in history as among the greatest of all time. So that was a perfect moment. That was the eye of the storm.
And they hated each other.
and they hated each other. Yeah, that rivalry went crazy. And it would have done so earlier if Ron Dennis weren't so good at managing the temperament of his drivers. But I thought it was a fascinating race. We said it would be dependent on the pits. And look at those pit stops.
Yeah,
1.9-second stop for Red Bull.
That was amazing.
Graphic.
Yeah. And yeah. McLarens, we said, have been fast. The McLarens were all 2.1, 2.2. Did very, very well to keep their guys in the race. Obviously, they don't have quite what they need. The Ferraris, when early in the race, when Sainz was chasing Leclerc, and Leclerc was on the harder tire, Sainz had the soft reds, the idea being to get as far up the queue as he could before making his pit stop. Sainz would not get within 15 car lengths of his rival. And that told me, I could be wrong, but I thought that meant the Ferraris are very bad in traffic when the roiled air, the turbulence of the car ahead makes it very difficult to get close. So Sainz was asking them, you know, let me get by and do what I can. Martin Brundle was really intrigued, let's say, by the idea that Ferrari didn't say, hey, let Sainz go by and see how far up the grid he can get. That, get out of the way.
Again, that surprised me. Again, tactically, you know, a 9.4 second stop for Leclerc, then he blows it by locking up the wheels, going too fast to pit lane. You know, so he can't really shout at the team on that one. But you're right. I mean, that was early on. Sainz was on the softer tire, and he should have really just blasted past as team orders would allow. Martin, as you say, said, "Yeah, don't worry, we'll give it back later in the race."
Yeah, you've got to feel bad for poor old Alpine, who are plummeting down the charts now in the Constructors' Championship as well as the drivers. And it wasn't entirely their fault. Poor Ocon gets hit up the back and he winds up taking out his teammate. And
have we heard about his injury yet? I mean, I say injury.
Yeah,
the seat broke and he went to the medical center. Have you heard any more?
No,
not that I know of. He hurt his back. I haven't seen anything from the team on social media.
You know, that's back-to-back DNFs for Alpine?
Yeah.
Yes, double DNFs.
DNFs, plus they fired their CEO.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, Rossi.
Which is, that's
interesting. And that's interesting about the comments. Remember all the comments that he made?
Start getting involved.
Yeah. That he made that fired up
the team? Yep.
sorry, Bob.
That totally backfired. It's tough. Good thing they didn't go to our old friend Otmar Szafnauer, the team principal, on the pit wall, because I think he was probably on suicide watch at that point. So, you know, it's a typical race. Some people triumph, some people, you know, suffer tragedy, in a motor racing sense.
I think
it was tough.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is how Verstappen's radio right at the end of the race, I don't know if you noticed, but he was gushing about he said, I so enjoyed that last. And I mean, you know, racing drivers, you know, generally speaking, are pretty whiny. But it just feels as though he is in the zone, and the tools he's got to do his job are just luxurious in terms of stress. He's not making mistakes.
Late in the race, his engineer, you know, it's like it's like a couple on a summer vacation going down the interstate.
Yeah,
the engineer kind of looks over and says, "How's everything?" The driver says, "All good."
Yep. Amazing.
That one.
It's almost like he was checking he was awake.
Really?
You're right. You right, mate? Yeah. It's like late night driving. Are you okay? Are you okay? You feeling sleepy?
Yeah. And you know, conspiracy theorists are going to say, "Oh well, you know, they're building the car around Max Verstappen, and it's hurting Sergio Perez." Maybe. But isn't it what you want to do? You've got a generational talent, as I said earlier. Give him everything he needs. And if that means number two has to live with something maybe he's not comfortable with, too bad.
And I have no problem with that whatsoever, because come the day, come the hour, Mercedes, McLaren, and McLaren proved it again today, a completely different track. And if they're competitive again next week, you know, you need one of those cars with Verstappen to be ahead of those McLarens and Mercedes, because they're going to come. And they're going to come fast, and don't count out, you know, a return of Aston Martin as well. I think this slower circuit, and just the nuances of it just weren't suited to the Aston Martin or the Williams today. And I just, you know, like you say, you absolutely prepare for the day when the competition's coming, and you certainly build the car around the guy who's faster.
Mm. Absolutely.
Speaking of the rest of the grid, let me just run down the grid. Of course, Max Verstappen wins the race. with a gap of 33.7 seconds over Lando Norris, who made it interesting with Checo Perez behind him in third, followed by Lewis Hamilton, Oscar Piastri in fifth, and George Russell, and then Charles Leclerc, who, of course, will be in seventh, who will end up with that five-second penalty, followed by Carlos Sainz, Fernando Alonso in ninth, his teammate Lance Stroll in 10th. Good for Lance Stroll to catch up to his teammate there. Alex Albon in 11th, Bottas, Ricciardo finishing 13th, well ahead of his teammate, and Hülkenberg in 14th, Yuki Tsunoda, Joe Guan Yu in 16th, Kevin Magnussen, the last of the running cars, and then Logan Sargeant, who had a late spin with just a couple laps to go, retired his car, and then, of course, the two Alpines, Ocon and Gasly, both retired early on in the race. And what about that speeding with Leclerc, Jonathan? Did we ever decide when all that took place? Because in my head, I was thinking, was he distracted by that strange radio message that Ferrari sent Leclerc right in the middle of the race, where it said they were saying, we'll take care of it at the end. What were they saying?
Oh, that was before that. No, that
it was before that.
Yeah. But basically he got on the radio and said to them, are we stopping? Right. He didn't say the number of stops, but are we stopping? And they said, we are sorting it. We are sorting it.
We don't know.
We'll tell you at the end. And he goes, what do you mean the end? And it was just bad sort of Italian English sort of thing.
Right.
And yeah. What they meant was that I think what they really meant was they hadn't decided yet. And they certainly weren't going to let the competition know what they decided. So, but Leclerc was like genuinely miffed and saying, what are you talking about? Are we stopping or aren't we stopping?
Is that when the engineer or somebody said, leave it alone or something like that? You know, don't press.
Yeah.
I think essentially.
Don't keep bugging us. Just drive the car.
Kind of. And then, he came in for his pit stop and then speeded in the pit lane. You saw him lock up the left front and then was given a five-second penalty before it. But then he added his own woes because they took time getting one of the wheels on, and it was 9.4 seconds.
9.4, where we saw the 1.9. We saw so many low twos. What was that, Jonathan?
I just want to tell our American friends, our viewers, that there's a documentary on, but I'm sure it'll be repeated, but it's about Jackie Stewart.
I saw this, yeah.
And it's about his life. And I think it'll be well worth a watch, a documentary on the three-time world champion, Jackie Stewart. Amazing, amazing man.
If you've read any of his books, he's written two or three. It is an amazing career. One of the most fascinating parts to me, having worked with the guy calling a race in Monaco back in 91, he is incredibly dyslexic.
Yep.
Doesn't read well. He has to write his own sort of script that only he can read. He was once a crack shooter, one of the top
Olympic
skeet shooters in the world, missed out on the British Olympic team for games. He had not missed in a blue moon, but when it mattered most, he missed and failed to make the team. And he said he learned more from that experience than virtually anything else he did in his athletic career. So he's a fascinating guy in so many ways.
Yeah.
Now trying to raise money to fight dementia, which his wife, Helen, suffers from. Quite a guy.
And also, when you look at the period he was involved in motor racing and how he played a role in changing it. It was a very dangerous time, you know. The 70s was probably the worst attrition rate. I remember talking to Brian Redman about this, you know, each week and every week, you didn't get too close. You went and partied Sunday night, but you didn't become best friends because you knew down well that there was a possibility that that guy may not be at the bar the following Sunday night.
Right.
And that was the time of Jackie Stewart. And he said, no, I don't accept that. It's unacceptable. And I know motorsport is dangerous, but we got to work to make it better. And he solely, literally, was the man that said, we must make these things safer. And then on from him, Michael Schumacher and the GPA or whatever it's called continues today.
And now the safety of all motorsports is just
it's phenomenal,
incredible.
Yeah. Thanks to Jackie.
And it's worth noting that he took an incredible amount of flack for it.
Yes,
his fellow drivers were calling him a coward because he didn't want to go out and race. But he realized, you know, he said once in the late 60s when he won his first world championships, he said, you know, you knew that one in three drivers around you was going to be dead by the end of the season at some point. It was that brutal. And David Hobbs, Derek Bell, and all the time I spent talking with guys like that, one of the subjects that always comes up when you talk about the old days was they were so happy to survive that era. Mm. Yeah, they all did great things, but they know every bit how dangerous it was.
Yeah, amazing. Definitely worth a watch. And like you say, read the books as well.
Yeah. And, you know, I think of the safety and the reliability. Those were such big things back in the day. And you and I were talking during the race today, Jonathan, how reliability is almost off the table now this season.
In Formula One this season,
It's reached that point. You know, we saw the Haas car go up in flames with the Ferrari motor last race. But, I mean, it's hard to remember how many DNFs just purely mechanical this year.
Or to get to the halfway point in a season as we are and say how many DNFs have we had. I mean, at one point a few years ago, weren't we talking like Red Bull were like looking for their fifth power unit or something?
Yeah, when the era of this now, when we get the next generation of power units, maybe, but they are going to be, more electric. They're going to be almost 50-50 electric, which is, in theory, a lot more reliable, a lot less moving parts. So reliability may become less and less of a thing these days. So it certainly was today and has been for the most part this year.
Yep. And the book, the short monograph I wrote with Dan Gurney about his Spa win in 1967, I'd looked at the research and routinely race in, race out, half the field would not finish, usually for mechanical reasons. Half the field.
And wasn't it one of Jackie's teammates that died that really changed his view of all of it? I'm trying to think of the guy's name.
I am too. I can see his face.
Yeah.
Killed at Watkins Glen. Jackie retired on the spot.
He did, didn't he?
His 100th Grand Prix, but he said that's
Sever.
It. Ken Tyrrell pulled the team. Yeah, François Sever. Gruesome incident, reinforcing Jackie's belief that things needed to be done. Tough. All part of that great Stewart story.
Hey, let's go back to the beginning of the race real quick, guys, because we saw a good start from Hamilton, but we also saw a great start from Verstappen. But then Piastri took advantage of that.
What was cool about the start was that you thought Hamilton had it because he got off the line really well.
Yeah.
But Verstappen chased him down, and that's I knew that, like I said, it was longer than I thought when I saw that F2 race. And got into a position where he got up the inside and basically, in a racing okay format, pushed Hamilton or forced Hamilton wide to keep his position. I mean, in other words, Hamilton couldn't turn in on him, but he was doing it purposely to get the position. And by opening up that corner and giving space on the inside, Piastri said, "Thank you very much.
I'll take that."
And he had a blinding start because he got past his teammate and boom, off you go.
And one guy who did not get a great start, and I'm surprised there was no accident, was Zhou Guanyu.
Terrible start.
They did so much great work this weekend, qualified well, both cars in the top 10, and then it all just came apart, unfortunately. They were one of three teams, I think, that really suffered badly. Yeah, Williams also had a bad day, and regrettably, Haas also had a bad day.
Yeah, Haas has been really struggling, haven't they? And, you know, we've seen some good qualifying out of Hülkenberg, but, man, the race pace continues to be the struggle for them.
Yeah, I think those cars just eat their tires. You know, when you're struggling for performance in Formula One, the tempting thing to do, let's say, is to take it from the tires. And so I think those cars are very hard on their tires, looking for the last tenth of a second. And that's but performing for them in qualifying, at least for Hülkenberg, and what's hurting them in the race is that they just chew up their tires and have to slow down, which is unfortunate, but something that they can remedy, and hopefully they will.
Well, the one thing that's now very apparent is that the McLaren upgrades are
real.
They're real, and they're gonna be a force to be reckoned with here.
I actually think that's going to be a story for the second half of the season, is both Piastri and Lando Norris stepping up and doing an Alonso in terms of, you know, getting elbows out and being part of the front group. No question.
They're fifth in the constructors right now, having moved into that position 2 weeks ago in Britain. And I think they're going to continue to climb. Teams like Aston Martin, better watch out. McLaren's coming.
Yeah, and I do think, I don't know if you agree, Bob, but looking at Spa, looking ahead, Aston Martin will bounce back. So will Williams, you know, the straight line speed, all the rest of it. Yeah. And the nature of Spa will be much more, helpful to both Aston Martin and Williams's quest, perhaps even Haas.
Yep. It's a big power track, very fast, similar in some ways to Silverstone. Be interesting to see how many teams opt to put new power units in if they have that ability under the rules, because it is quick. You can pass fairly easily. There's a lot of good passing. Well, not a lot, but there's a few very good passing spots on the track. So, don't miss Spa next week.
It's always a cracker.
We are going to get a break in, and when we come back, we'll continue to break down the Hungarian Grand Prix after this.
As a rider, you know what you like. power, the feel, the ride. When it comes to gear, you know what keeps you safe. Ducati Austin provides riders with the finest in day and easy leathers, the best the market offers. Visit Ducati Austin on Breaker Lane just east of I-35 and throw your leg over the most iconic sports bike ever built, Ducati. Even take it for a test ride or see what's been described as art on wheels from MV Agusta. You know what you like. See it at Ducati Austin. Online at DucatiAustin.com.
Winding Road Racing is your first and best choice for all the essentials for a great weekend at the track. We're racers, and we love helping racers. With a full selection of racing gear in stock, get geared up with all the safety equipment needed to meet all the latest Snell FIA and SFI regulations. Outfit your car with a comprehensive lineup of racing necessities, and when you need to find a few more tents, turn to data acquisition systems from AIM Sports, V-Box, and others. Austin-based with shops in California, Georgia, and Kentucky, the source for all your racing needs. Winding Road Racing, WindingRoadRacing.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hi, this is Max Verstappen, and you're listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, guys, we have a caller on the line. We have Billy from Kansas City. Billy, welcome to the show. What did you think of the race?
I thought it was a good race. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
I thought it was great to see McLaren. I thought that, you know, they're a power team, and they looked great at Silverstone, but I didn't expect them to look as good here at the Hungaroring. You know, it's pretty much Monaco without the walls. And they performed well, obviously. So that's, I think that shows that the upgrades have stuck, and they should look really good at Spa as well. I think they should continue to, I think you guys said, this should be really exciting for the second half of the season to see where McLaren goes.
Billy, what's your interest in the sport? How long have you followed Formula One?
I'd say I've been a fan since 07. I'm a Lewis Hamilton fan. and yeah, so, you know, a little disappointed today. I was very excited yesterday. I thought it was, I will say, one thing, I watched the his post-race or post-quali interview, and it looks like he's finally feeling a little more in tune with that car and can put in a little bit more speed into corners, whereas before he was either having his spine rattled or I think these new cars, they seem to be, you know, because of their size, if you don't feel the car really under you, you can't put in the full speed that you know you can in these corners. I think that Lewis could. And then Max, obviously, just great race. Great race by George, too. I want to make note. I mean, a pretty bad quali for him. I liked the new quali rules that made it kind of, we got an interesting grid. But good by George to recover from a pretty bad quali.
You'd like them to keep it? You'd like to keep the rules as they are with the new qualifying system?
I've been a fan long enough to see a few quality rules come and go, and I think anything that's
true that,
you know, I mean, they just Is it artificial? Yes. You know, I think it is artificial to force people to have to be on the same tire. But yeah, I think it why not have these cars? Why not have these cars and drivers for limited amounts of time go all out on the same strategy and see how it go, you know, to see how they stack up. They're trying, and this is interesting, and yeah, I think I'd like to see them stick with it. I'd like to see them try it out. I think it's better than sprints. So yeah,
you know there's what, Billy? Thanks for that, because
good,
you know,
point.
Yeah, exactly. You make a very good point that none of us have made, which is it better than the sprints? And I think that's worth putting into the mix there.
What's worse? I think the ATA system.
Well, in terms of the conversation about instead of a sprint race, do we keep what we just saw or do we go back, you know?
Hey, Billy, you said you've been a fan since 07. Was there something about 07? Was it just, how did that happen?
Lewis arrived.
Well, I mean, I was a high schooler and it was just, I knew of Michael Schumacher, but it really, you know, and I'm a fan of a couple other, you know, rugby and cricket and whatnot, but it was really hard to follow. It was really hard to watch. I mean, I would get, you know, and this wasn't for F1, but, you know, Setanta Sports was a thing that I had to get in order to watch some of these things. So it wasn't very easy. And I would say at that point in time, we kind of opened it up. And I will also say a little bit more interesting to see different people involved in the sport. Let's just say that.
You don't sound like an Aussie. I mean, cricket, rugby, Formula One.
He's from Kansas.
The Irish grandmother.
Ah, there you go. Billy.
You were well raised.
Go Jordan. We missed the Jordan there.
Yeah,
there
you go. Yeah,
he was the Gunter Steiner of his day.
He was. And played drummer in the band after the race was over.
Yep, Damon Hill on guitar.
That's it.
Billy, thanks for calling, buddy.
Thanks, man. Good point. Very interesting.
Yeah, it's really good because we rambled on pretty good about, you know, that we didn't like what we saw yesterday.
Hey,
in qualifying.
And that's why I like to hear what people have to say, because it's changing my view each and every time. But I still stick, and I think Bob's the same. I think I still stick by the artificialness of it, and he admitted that. And that's what the more artificial, I mean, don't start me. I mean, every time they showed a replay of a DRS move in that race, you and me both raised our eyebrows and went, Is that a worthy replay?
I get a tweet for you.
You know, that's like watching a soccer game where everybody pulls out of the way of Messi and he just walks into the goal. You know, you want to see the challenge of an overtake, and DRS is not giving me that. Not giving me that.
Again.
Oh, well. Bob, would you agree? You know, one thing we came up with during the race? You know how India are doing a doubleheader this weekend and the push to pass?
Yeah.
I always enjoy seeing the amount of seconds they've got. Because it gives you an idea of where your guy, let's say you're cheering on one particular Pello or Dixon or whatever, it gives you an idea of what your guy against the other guy he's racing has left in the tank, as it were, to do push to pass. And Dixon is my guy. I love to see how well he manages that. How about an idea of basically limiting DRS to, let's say, 10 uses or 60 seconds or 2 minutes? So that there is a comparative, like you come out of the pits and you're in 10th place and you're George Russell and you've got Sonoda in front of you. Well, you're faster than Sonoda, so you don't need DRS to get past him. But then you come across Perez and you think, and you use a good amount of your DRS. I mean, I'm just, you know, I'm spitballing, but what do you think?
Yeah.
What do you think, Bob?
Sorry, I have to write to my daughter. She had a birthday yesterday. I wasn't able to talk to her, so I'm texting now. No, I agree. I'm sort of half listening. Yeah, I agree. And this whole alternate tire thing. I mean, looking at the grid, how much did it really change things?
No.
Who is up front?
Yeah.
Hamilton, Verstappen, Norris, the Ferraris. Yeah, you had a couple of usurpers there in the Alfa Romeo cars and the Haas. Well, I mean, Nico Hülkenberg has been putting that car into Q3 for some time now. I don't think it changed that much. So to hail it as some kind of revolutionary improvement of the show, I think it's a red herring. I don't think it improves the show.
And
I think it restricts the show somewhat.
And I stand by what I said yesterday, which is, for the purists, qualifying is it. I get to a race weekend and I care more about what happened in qualifying than I do about the result, because the result, it can be so, you know, it's a lottery in many ways, a race in a good way. But the pure, you know, to watch the fastest man over one lap on the same, you know, tire as everybody else. I always think, yeah, sure, some have better machines than others, but you really can. Yeah. And if you are somebody like Ricciardo or Tsunoda making your way either back into Formula One or up the ladder, that's where you got noticed. That's why George Russell is where he is right now, is because we called him Mr. Saturday. And there's a reason why George Russell suddenly shone for Williams in a completely uncompetitive car. It's because he did things with it that no one else could do, and he did it all in qualifying. In the race, he was nowhere. So I stand by what I said, and I also think that basically having a tire test is not the essence of qualifying in my mind.
Mm. Yeah, and the supporters have argued that it gives the others a chance. It really doesn't. I mean, if I've got an inferior car and we're in Q1 and I'm on the hard tire, I'm not going to be able to move up. I'm going out in Q1 because I can't go to a medium or a soft tire to try to squeeze my way into Q2. That's why I say I think it restricts the show rather than enhancing it.
Yeah,
and as we said before, the whole sustainability thing. We want to transport fewer tires around the world, 4,000 fewer tires. Fine, just give everybody 11 sets of tires instead of 13, and they'll adjust.
I agree. And, you know, and there's no, it doesn't seem like there's any thought process to the weather changing. Because if you are forced to spend 15 minutes on a hard tire in qualifying and there is, you know, precipitation or it's just rained and stopped, you know, it just doesn't hold right for me. The changing variable weather, wind, whatever, and you're forced to be on a tire that you don't want to be on.
Somebody on YouTube says, what about Interplace 55 says, what about disabling DRS for qualifying too?
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's try that.
Yep.
Yeah. All these are reasonable. And I think you and I were sitting there talking, Jonathan, thinking about how Indy's pushed past. Because, like you said, you were watching yesterday, and then you watch for the graphic. You go, okay, he's coming up on somebody's, you know, Newgarden's about to pass, but how much push to pass does he have left?
Yeah, and how many laps have we got left, and how much push to pass have each of the top 20 got?
So DRS, you could have either the number of DRSs or even the number of seconds. You could be in mid-pass and run out of DRS. How exciting would that be?
So, I think there's a lot to it. And especially when you could see a graphic of it going down or the amount of power you've got left on that DRS. Anyway, I do away with it.
You DRS. David Lawrence on YouTube says, please limit DRS in 2024.
There you go. Good.
All right, guys, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue this discussion and more. Listen to Speed City F1 back after these messages. Hey guys, we are very excited to welcome our new sponsor, Allstott Brewery, to Speed City. These guys make a fantastic beer, and I'm going to let Jonathan talk about it, but I'm going to tell you about it. When I tasted it, I'm not a big beer aficionado. I like a nice cold beer, but I'm always worried about a craft beer or a new beer that it's going to have a funky taste, especially aftertaste. This beer was fantastic. I have absolutely no qualms at all that this is my new favorite beer. But Jonathan, you know why? What makes it so special? The water and the recipe?
Well, yeah. I mean, these guys have done their research and do it right. And they've even imported the right water to do it right. I mean, I tell you, this Allstott beer, fantastic. And I'm, most Europeans are snobs about their beer. And I'm definitely one of those. Because
you're definitely a snob?
Yes, okay. About my beer.
Okay.
because there's no question, carbonation has always been my issue here in the States. It's overcarbonated. And our lagers, our pilsners and lagers in Europe, especially German ones, are not that heavily carbonated. And that's a key thing. And that's the first thing that hit me was just how well they've done the beer. It's based out of Fredericksburg. It's got a great tie-in because obviously Fredericksburg, a German town, and now they've got a Texas German beer, and it's cracking.
Yeah, and the facility out there, it's amazing. They've really done it right. It's really fantastic. So check it out. You can get it at all the local HEBs and everything else, right?
Yep. It's around all around Texas. You can get it. They sell it in on the shelf there as a Texas beer. But I'll tell you what, you're right back in Germany when you drink it.
And it's Altstadt Beer, altstadtbeer.com. Altstadt Beer, altstadtbeer.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at tmobile.com/across America.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Hi, this is Jay Leno from JayLenosGarage.com, and you're listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, Jonathan.
We should get Jay Leno on the show.
You know what? I have asked. I've almost had Jay Leno a couple times, but I...
Really?
You know, yeah. Well, I say I went back and forth with his people, but I never succeeded. What are you smirking at over there, Green?
I'm laughing. I almost had Jay Leno, yeah. So were you wandering around the streets of L.A. going, hey, Jay? Well,
his people at least were responding. They at least took my
I mean, Jerry Seinfeld, if I get another call from him and he leaves another silly joke on my answer machine.
Well, where are they all? Okay, so I was going to ask you about what else you saw from today. Yeah, you know, Bob brought a good point. You and I are sitting in the studio and we started complaining because it wasn't exciting, but we all know that if you can sit down and concentrate on what's happening during the race, there's always good stories going on.
Yeah. No, we love excitement. We always love a knife edge finish and also a real good human battle for position. And that, you know, that really didn't evolve greatly in that race. That's all. And Hungary is famous for being the place where you can't overtake, and it's all done in the pit lane. I mean, that's the first thing, you know, 101. They had those kids in the booth in Sky Sports, and, you know, if they'd have said to me, hey, what's the first thing I should learn about Hungary? It's like, okay, watch the strategy. Look at the strategy, because most of what you will see will happen in the pit lane, and if there's a surprise, it will be because somebody's undercut or overcut, whatever.
Okay, well, I'm laughing because there's this tweet that our producer Casey's, I think he's taking a phone call, but I'm going to get him to play it for people watching on YouTube. But Lando, I'll describe it for you, because Lando Norris is on the podium, right? And if you saw last week in Britain, he took the big Magnum champagne bottle and he grabs it and he slams it down on the podium so it shoots up and it gets the spray going. Well, he does that next to Max's race winning trophy.
No.
And knocks it off the stage and it rolls off the stage. He glances back, so I don't know if it's broken or not, but yeah. Max has his back to him. So he can't see what's happening.
That's funny.
In fact, I remember when Sebastian Bourdais won the Long Beach Grand Prix IndyCar race and got the trophy, which was this huge glass thing, but it was two pieces. It was a top and a bottom, like an urn with a lid. And he picked it up and held it kind of sideways, and the top went. And he looked around. The look on his face was priceless.
Well,
it happens.
If you could see this, I mean, it rolls completely off the podium top step, down a couple. Here we go. We got it playing now. And I don't know if it's broken, but hopefully they have the manufacturer standing by to repair it or give him a new one, because it's clearly going to be a little worse for wear for sure.
That was a heck of a geyser of champagne, too.
Yeah.
Which everybody does now. I don't know who figured out that if you take the top off a champagne bottle and smack it on the ground, you know, the bubbly goes everywhere. The Formula E guys do it all the time now. And it's pretty spectacular.
David Lawrence says, thanks, Linda, for giving us something to talk about. Andy P., it needs some glue.
I tell you what, Max Verstappen, and I'm looking at some of Virtual Statman's stats here on the race. And if you doubt Verstappen's place in history, among other things, he's the fifth driver to win seven consecutive races, following Alberto Ascari, Michael Schumacher, Sebastian Vettel, and Nico Rosberg.
Wow.
Elite company. Verstappen's 24th race win since the start of 2022, tying Juan Manuel Fangio's career total, and just one behind the career totals of Jim Clark and Niki Lauda.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it really is. Verstappen's 30th consecutive classified finish breaks Daniel Ricciardo's Red Bull team record. Career win number 44, led start to finish for the 11th time in his career today, tying Sir Jackie Stewart and Michael Schumacher. I mean, listen to those names.
Wow.
What Verstappen is accomplishing with Red Bull is extraordinary.
Bob, I hate to interrupt you. I have some breaking news.
Yeah. Breaking news. I get it. Ding, ding.
The trophy is
straight
destroyed.
Out of the Jonathan Green top draw dad joke.
The trophy is in pieces. We've got it all.
It's broken.
It's broken. And that truly is breaking.
Got an arm load. Oh, dear.
Thank you. I'll let myself
out. It's a great shot of Verstappen looking at Lando as though to say, thanks, man.
I think I see a smirk.
Oh, that is
well,
funny.
There's a new job for somebody in Formula One. You're the trophy retriever before the guys start all their champagne spraying. Run up there and grab that sucker.
And if you see I'm seeing it up close now. It is ceramic. So there's no doubt that
I can see the jokes now. Did he earn it?
Ooh.
Okay. We have
breaking
the jokes,
news.
But they're staying in here, right?
Okay. Topped it off well.
Okay. Andy P's now taking us. His Outlab podcast is retweeting the broken trophy. Andy P, you see, I'm following you too close because you're coming up in my feed here on Twitter.
That's too funny.
Okay.
Who got fast lap today? I don't even know.
Verstappen.
Fast lap?
He killed it.
Oh, great. 26 points.
Yeah, as far as I can remember, fastest lap was definitely 120 something. It was way ahead.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he just demolished everybody.
And then he went on the radio and complained about the marbles.
Yeah. Hey, we do have a caller. We have.
Come on, bring him on.
I think this is the gentleman who's called yesterday, and I'm glad he called because he was great yesterday. We have John from New Jersey. We've had a John and a Bob that make this as confusing as possible. But John from New Jersey. Hey, John, how's it going, buddy?
Hey, good morning. Good morning. It was an interesting race. Listen, it's a Formula One race. It's the epitome of world racing. So, yeah, it's good even if it's quote-unquote boring. So I enjoyed it from beginning to end. That's my two cents.
Good.
I do have a question, and I wish you could speak to it. And I've always had this question for a long time. Oh, by the way, Bob, I'm a big Jackie Stewart fan to this day. I respect the man for his accomplishments, and thanks for the insight on. I didn't know about his inside struggles with dyslexia, so thanks. That's good information.
Yeah.
But having said that, listen, on the tire manufacturers, I know we're on Pirellis now, and I gotta admit, on my family car, my wife's car, I went and bought a set of new Pirellis, and I gotta say, some of it was influenced because what I watch on Sundays with F1. But having said that, I remember when we were on Michelin. How do the manufacturers switch like this, and who determines that?
Well, Bob, do you want to take it? Or
yeah, he asked Bob. So
well, it's done by a tender process, and your question is well-timed because Pirelli's exclusive rights to provide Formula One tires is coming to an end under the current contract, and they're going to, the FIA, that is going to reopen the tender process, and Michelin says they want to bid for it, so we may see a change. But, it's purely a contractual thing, and you make a bid for it.
And the only point I would add is the reason why it is only one manufacturer is we did have a time, both in two wheels and four wheels, where competition was kind of welcomed, and you had Bridgestone and you had Michelin and you had Pirelli. But of course, as you can imagine, then it became a tire war, and that led to basically costs rising for testing and right. development and so on and so forth. So I don't think it would happen in this current era where we're trying to be more sustainable and more, careful with our spending. You know, we have a cost cap for Formula One. So if we had a tire war now where Michelin tried to outdo the Pirelli, et cetera, and then that leads also to running on fumes when it comes to a tire, i.e. you take it to the last nth, you know, of its life. Whereas you could control these tires now, and Pirelli know exactly, pretty much, how many laps their soft tire will give you optimally, and how, you know, how quickly it will degrade. In fact, if you go on F1.com, you can tell, it'll give you a graphic that says the medium is 0.3 slower than the soft, and the hard is 0.8 slower than the soft, and so on. So in that respect, it has a reason, and Pirelli can control that environment. And I think that is important in modern racing. I just want to add that.
Yes. There's also the safety factor. If the tire companies are going to that nth degree Jonathan described, there's a chance they may cross a line and come up with an unsafe tire. And there's also the contractual matter with the teams. When you have multiple tire suppliers, they pick and choose their teams. And everybody remember, well, maybe not everybody, but 2005 at Indianapolis in the U.S. Grand Prix, when it was held there. Three teams were on Bridgestones. The rest of the field was on Michelin's. The Michelin's came into question, unfairly, I think, but that's another story entirely. And the result was all the Michelin cars pulled off the track on the formation lap, and we had a Grand Prix with six cars in it.
Yep. So that's what can go wrong.
Hey, I want to ask John on the caller, John, about, you said you switched from Michelin to Pirelli. You know, for road cars, all the magazines, and my personal experience has been, like, on my cars, Michelin is what I go with. And I've tried, a handful of others and regretted it every time and gone back to Michelin. And what did you think when you switched, John?
It's too soon to tell. I'm only 2 weeks into the tires, and my wife says she loves the feel. Now, we're going from a tire that came with the vehicle, so it only had a relatively short life. Firestones, they were, and they were okay. But she likes the ride. She said she could tell a difference, and whether it's psychological or it's true, I feel a more surety under me. But it's a brand new tire. It's kind of the degradation on the other one. It's too soon for me to tell. I'll tell you in maybe 10,000 miles.
I will say one thing. I always call Formula One the test tube for the rest of us, i.e. it's the testing ground. And tire technology, we can be thankful to Formula One and other forms of motorsport.
Yep.
But having visited the Pirelli factory in Milan, there's no question that the Michelins or the Firestones or the Pirellis you've got are all so good at lasting so long and giving you the comfort and safety that knowing that your daughter or your wife or whoever is out there in their car, they have supreme technology at their behest underneath them, as it were. And that's all developed in racing.
Yeah, that's the trickle down.
Yeah, there's nothing quite like the feel of a new set of shoes on your streetcar.
That is so true, magic. Bob.
True.
Yeah, that's a fact.
Hey,
Jonathan and Bob, thank you.
No
appreciate
problem.
You, gentlemen.
Thanks, John. Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening.
Do we have some kind of female filter on our call? Where are all the girls?
Yeah, come on, girls.
Do you have an opinion?
Yeah.
Ring us up.
Yeah, ladies, come on. All right, well, we do have a caller on the line, but let's get a quick break in, and then we're going to go to Bryn in Illinois.
Ah, good man.
All right, stick with us through the break. We'll be right back.
Motivation USA, catering to the sport bike enthusiast looking for truly unique parts and accessories. Stand out from the crowd. Motivation is the exclusive North American distributor for SC Project MotoGP inspired exhausts and the largest Rizoma retailer in the United States. Get the best parts from around the world at the best prices with fast shipping and a knowledgeable staff ready to help. Shop online 24/7 at MotivationUSA.com. That's MotivationUSA.com.
If you want to know where the path to Formula One and Indy begins, it's three simple letters, VRD. VRD Racing of Atlanta, Georgia are dedicated to nurturing young, single-seater drivers on their quest to the pinnacle of motorsport. Having just wrapped up the team's championship title in 2021 in the F4 US Championship, they also have programs in FR Americas, the all-new USF Juniors, and the Road to Indy. VRD is the perfect environment for success. To join the team, drop them a DM on Instagram at velocity_RD.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
This is Greg Astley, and you're listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, welcome back. I said we'd go to a caller, and we're going to go straight out to Bryn in Illinois. Hi, Bryn. How are you?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Gutted, actually. Sorry for Lewis's start, but I guess that's Max all over on the start again. But I thought he would have put a better race than what he did, actually. I know he thought he got back in the end, but... He dropped so far back at the start of the race, he made it impossible then to get any higher than fourth, I think.
But, yeah, it's ironic, isn't it? Because he's known as the best starter out there. I mean, even better than Max.
Yeah, I know. I don't know what happened, actually. I don't know if it's something they can work out with the telemetry afterwards. But, yeah, it was gutted there. I was really looking forward to, somebody that could challenge Max this time around. But it wasn't to be, unfortunately. But Perez did well to get to third. And Lando breaking a trophy, that was funny.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
Of all the people, yeah.
And Max had his back to him, so he couldn't see it when it was happening. I'm sure he turned around and was like, what the heck happened? What did you do?
Yeah, I think Lando, because Lando's always moaning about Max, so that's his payback, I think, having a smashing time.
He's having a smashing time. See, that's good Welsh there. He's having a smashing time.
A smashing time in it, boyo.
In it, boyo.
Yeah, you sound like you're far eastern Illinois. Is that it, Bryn?
Yeah. So, how, Bryn, we asked our last caller this. When did you? I mean, obviously, growing up, but what was your instigation into F1 rather than any other sport?
Well, I raced a kart 30, 40 years ago. I was in the Britain class, just the single engine. Then I went up to the 250, but the national, not the international, just a single engine. And everybody said, if you go around Donington, this is the second quickest to a Formula One. So that got me into following Formula One. That was 30, 40 years ago now, a long time ago. But when Jackie Stewart was in his heyday, I guess.
Yeah, and I tell you what, if you've never driven a kart, it's, you don't have to be a Formula One driver to experience what it feels like to be going fast. When you're that low, you're going as fast as you want to be.
That low and that exposed. Go ahead, Bryn.
Yeah, in the 250, when we were doing the long circuits down in West Wales in Pembrey.
Yeah.
My buddy's really good with a calculator. He reckons we had an inch off the floor, and we were doing 140 mile an hour, which felt a lot quicker because you're only an inch off the floor.
I know, that is huge.
Right.
And people don't realize how fast those carts can go, 140.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
They used to hold, maybe they still do, a supercart weekend during the Christmas holidays at Daytona on the big track, Daytona International Speedway. And those guys would exceed 190 miles an hour.
What?
In a cart.
In a cart?
That's nuts.
Check it out.
Jeez.
That is
nuts.
That's
funny. I got a text from my cousin Jeff. You probably never met him, but he's up in Kansas City area. And he's older than me. And he sent me this video of this little cart like that, right? Like just 2 inches off the ground. And I was like, I wonder who it is. And I zoomed in and froze it. And it's him. Like, and he's wearing shorts and like flip-flops. Like, what are you doing? He was going like 60 miles an hour. And he's older than me. I was like, okay, dude, you are braver than I. Because he was just zipping around a parking lot. Well, Bryn, have a good Sunday.
Hey, thanks for getting me on as always.
We were watching the Jackie Stewart thing, and they showed Spa from 1969 or something.
The more I'm seeing, Bob, the more I'm thinking you are going to love this.
Yeah.
Mm. You really are.
Jonathan, you had another story you want to talk
about. Yeah, I just want to introduce you to a young man who sort of popped up on the international field, although those in the know will know his name well. Max Esterson has basically done his second outing. He went and made his debut at Silverstone, and he raced again in FIF3 this weekend. He's from the US of A. But interestingly enough, when you look at his record, our good friend Jeremy Shaw will know him well, because he was the Walter Hayes Trophy. He was in the Walter Hayes Trophy in 22. And he won it in 21. And so, you know, that's what Jeremy does. And Bob, you're well aware of this scholarship.
Yes.
But Max Esterson, a name that we should start thinking about for the future.
Absolutely.
Along there with
And where'd
Jack
you say he's from?
I'm not, whereabouts in the States? I'm not sure. I'll have a check.
Isn't Esterson the guy who is from New York City?
Yeah, that's starting to ring. Let me check it out.
That always affected me when I see a good racer, great racer from New York City. I think, wow, not exactly the mecca of high speed driving, but you know, maybe he drives a taxi or something. Because yeah. those guys are plumb crazy. Mm. But let's not leave the point without saying what Jeremy Shaw has done for decades now with this
unbelievable
USA scholarship program to take two or three young American drivers who show promise. First, they have to go through a rigorous selection process, and then they have the support of a number of longtime motor racing entities, people, companies, what have you, to go race at Walter Hayes, a couple of different junior races over in the UK. It's a great experience. They talk about it all the time, and Jeremy deserves a lot of kudos for making it happen year after year after year.
And for those of us, even though it's getting on for me, but he is from New York City, he's 20. But for those of us who think, oh, I could never afford to go motor racing, there is an alternative. And Max is a good example. Esterson started his sim racing career on iRacing, and I've just signed up for iRacing, at the age of 11. And in 2020, he became the champion of the Formula Race Promotions iRacing Challenge. And the rest, as they say, is history.
Hey, have you seen the new movie coming out?
Yeah, on Gran Turismo.
With Jan Maldenborough.
Yeah.
As you know, based around his...
A Welshman, no less.
A Welshman?
Yes.
Did I do that even close?
No, I thought you were about to throw up. I thought you got something stuck in your throat.
That was good.
He's had quite a good career as
well. And the story...
Yeah, he has.
If you don't know the story, is that he had this PlayStation contest.
Yeah.
Where they had everybody competing all over the world in your computer, and then
and
they
playing took, PlayStation, basically.
Playing PlayStation, and if you know racing, and Jan Maldenborough won that, and they put him in a race car, and this was years ago, like a decade ago.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's a movie.
Yeah, Nissan sponsored the program.
That's right.
And put it was several young drivers. Then they scattered him through their various motorsports activities around the world, racing GT cars or open wheel cars or whatever here, there, and the other place. And Jan Maldenborough came through and now has had a long career.
Yeah, and I got to, I had two wonderful moments with Jan in that I was there when he drove his first ever car, the Toyota Racing Series down in New Zealand, and he did very well. But then I was at a GT race in Japan, and he was then in Super Formula and in Super GT. And that weekend he was in Super Formula, and we were doing a GT race that I was covering, but I knew he was on the board, so I wanted to go and see him because I knew him from Toyota. And so there he was. I walked into the pit and he was at the back of the pit having a massage, and I looked at him and I went, not bad for a boy from Wales getting a massage. I said, you are living the dream. And he sat up, stopped the massage, and went, oh, I know, it's great, isn't it?
I have a Jan Maldenbril story.
Go ahead.
So when this was happening, and they came to COTA, and they were doing some, I don't know, I put him in a car so he could get ready for the Silverstones where he made his debut.
Yeah.
So I got an email from Nissan, and they said, would you like to come and cover this event? And I was like, yeah, I'll see if I can work it in the schedule. And the guy emailed me back. He said, if you come out, we'll put you in a Nissan GTR.
Whoa.
And let me drive around COTA. So I immediately replied, said, yes, I'll be there shortly. And I go out and they put me in a Nissan GTR track edition.
Gosh.
So with a professional driver, they do a couple laps with him at the wheel, and then they put me behind the wheel.
Did you have stabilizer wheels on the outside?
I needed them. but yes, they let me drive this Nissan GTR track edition. And that was the first time I went 0 to 60, and I think it was right about 2 seconds flat.
Wow.
And I got to go around COTA, and I saw 165 on the back straight in that Nissan. Oh, and by the way, I did interview Jan Maldenbril, I think.
Yeah, that's a footnote.
Yeah, footnote. Yeah.
That's not really a Jan Maldenbril story, though, is it, John?
He was there. Well,
It may be worth noting, Jan Maldenbril is now 31 years old. He beat 90,000 entries.
That's right.
To win that GT Academy. I mean, think about that.
And he's still racing in Japan,
Yes, he's still racing. And those series you mentioned, Super GT and Super Formula, are the highest levels of Japanese racing.
Yep.
It's very, very cutthroat. Great drivers have come through there. Eddie Irvine, the list goes on and on of Europeans who go there and do very, very
Gasly,
well.
Gasly.
James Palato Award. Is another one. Pierre Gasly, yep.
Currently Lawson.
Andre Lotterer.
Yep.
Won about everything there was to win over there.
Richard Lyons made a career out of it. He's now driver coaching.
The guys, they make great money. They have quite active social lives. And I think it was, it's worth noting that Jan Maldenbril is a driver of color.
Yeah, yeah. You
know, all the attention goes to Lewis Hamilton, but Jan Maldenbril also has.
Where is he from?
He's from Wales. His dad was a semi-professional football player, and he grew up literally playing in his bedroom. He never got a chance to go near a racetrack. They didn't have anywhere near the money. A semi-professional football player, soccer player in England makes nothing.
We're out of time, boys and girls.
All right.
Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. And, of course, next week, Spa.
Spa.
So go to our website, speedcitybroadcast.com. You can find out all the information about everything. Check us out on social media, all the usual stuff. And we will talk to you next Sunday.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes. Nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.